Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, it has probably not escaped your notice that lately the weather has been kind of extreme. And all this severe weather, severe storms and extreme wind and rain, has been causing power outages throughout the East in particular. And in the West and the Midwest, record heat has placed record demands on the electric power grid. And in the winters, extremely cold and prolonged winters do the same thing. This extreme weather looks like it's going to continue into the future, unfortunately. But there are people who are doing the research needed to try to get ahead of this situation and modernize the nation's electric power transmission system. One such group of researchers is based at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, at the Engineering Research Center for Ultra-Wide Area Resilient Electric Energy Transmission Networks, also cleverly known as CURRENT. So this is a research center. It's part of a network, actually kind of interesting, of what are called engineering research centers that are funded by the National Science Foundation in D.C. that are spread around universities across the country. And they're a cross between a traditional university research center and a corporate research lab. They have a big system goal, that is, they work toward solving a big engineering problem using basic research and technology development. And they work closely with industry, and they work in multidisciplinary teams, including several university partners. So these are big network research centers. My guest today is the director of the CURRENT Center. His name is Kevin Tomcevic. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi.
Nice to have you on. So I'd say, just to kind of finish my little introduction here, the biggest challenge I think that we face as a nation in terms of energy is how to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. It's pretty obvious. It causes us problems in many different directions. And if we're going to rely more on alternate forms of energy than we so far have been able to do, part of the solution, I think, has to involve the way that energy is transmitted throughout the electric grid to the end users. Is that a fair statement, Kevin?
Yes, that's true, because the system we have now was very much designed to have centralized large generation. And most of the ways that people think of for benign sources like wind and solar, they're usually distributed, or they're not in the locations where you want to have your generation. They're not convenient to relative to the load. So that means you've got to move the power somewhere. And you want to do that efficiently and reliably and at a low cost.
So what kind of challenges does that make for researchers like yourself in figuring out how to deal with the transmission networks?
Well, there's several components of it. Most of the things that people are talking about, renewables, like wind and solar, have a lot of variability, some degree of unpredictability. So you don't know what's the wind going to be like tomorrow or a few hours from now. And then on top of that, even if you can predict it well, you build up a system to take advantage of resources, and if those resources aren't there at a particular time, the wind's not blowing that day, then you've got that transmission line there and it's not carrying any power, then that's a wasted resource. So it's that variability causes problems both in terms of planning and designing out the system, and then also when you're operating the system, because if it's not there, then you've got to find another source, and so you have to be a lot more flexible in how you operate the system.
So a big challenge is flexibility, and what other kinds of resources do you envision beyond the obvious solar and, I guess, wind power?
Yeah, well, those are clearly the two biggest. I mean, solar has gotten very grown quite a bit last year, but over the last 10 years, it's been wind that has grown the quickest. We're in, I think, around 60 gigawatts of installed capacity now in the U.S. So I think beyond those two sources, my own view is that it'll continue to be some more traditional resources. Obviously, hydro is still going to be there. There'll be some nuclear. But I think most of the other ones are probably going to be somewhat niche. Maybe you have some geothermal that depends very much on a particular location. People talk about things like low-head hydro, meaning or run-of-the-river hydro type things. But I think those will probably be relatively small. Same thing with ocean current and wave generation. So I think we're most likely, for the foreseeable future, looking at these systems with a lot of variability, like wind and solar.
So when you're talking about solar and wind, and particularly, I guess, maybe wind, you're kind of limited as to where the installations are, right? So I guess a bunch of wind turbine generators are going to be up along a mountain ridge somewhere many, many miles from the power plant or where the, you know, the transmission stations are. So does the long distance get to be another dimension of the problem in dealing with trying to integrate alternative energy into the existing system?
Yeah, it does. It's not so much the long distance itself, because we've have the tradition of transmitting power long distance. For example, in the United States, the Northwest has a lot of hydro resources, and that's sent down to California, so that's several thousand miles. And if you put it at a high enough voltage, like we do modern systems, you know, 500,000 volts and above, you have, that's relatively efficient. But when you do long distance with variability, then it's a problem. So with wind, what you find is not so much the mountaintop, so that can be a little bit, but it's where there's not very many people, right? So very good wind sites in North and South Dakota, West Texas, some of the other plain states, and that's not where the population lives. And so that means to take best advantage of those sites, you've got to move the power over long distance. And on top of that, since there aren't a lot of people there, there probably isn't a lot of transmission infrastructure in those parts of the country as it is. Hmm. So the system's got to be redesigned and rebuilt and invested in to take advantage of those.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Tomsavik, who's the director of the current Engineering Research Center at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And they're looking at basically how to modernize the nation's electric power transmission system. So, Kevin, what are you actually aiming at in the research being done at Current? What are your specific goals, if you can kind of itemize them?
Yeah, I guess the sort of the end goal here is we want to have this, you know, this ideal system, right? It's very flexible, it's highly reliable, it's low cost, all the good things, you know, and while taking advantage of the renewable resources that we have. So in terms of, you know, what that actually means, in the end, it's very much a control problem. If you're familiar in engineering, that's the whole field of controls, which basically is, you know, how do we get things to do what we want them to do? And then that has different components. So, you know, eventually we have this idea of how we want to control the system, then what are the things we need to do that? Well, we need to be able to monitor certain things in the system, voltages and currents, and the timing of those. We need to analyze that and have the models of the system so we can understand what those measurements are telling us. Then we've got to communicate it somewhere or everywhere or figure out how to do that, which points need to talk to each other. And then once we've got all this information and we have this thing, then we actually have to do something, right, which is we often typically call it actuation. Which just means we've got to do something to control the power flow. So that might be, in this situation, I need to start charging up some batteries somewhere to handle it. Or in this situation, maybe I need to spill wind, meaning we just let we don't take advantage of the generation because I'll let it spin off, or whatever it might need to be. But something that's going to change how the power flows through the system.
So from the standpoint of the end users, people like me at home or whatever, is the idea that ultimately it would reduce power blackouts, that, you know, these changes would kind of smooth out the system so you don't have the spikes and outages?
Right. And the idea, of course, for the end user is that it's all transparent, or as transparent as can be to you. So you're sitting at home, and despite all this variability, you don't have to experience it, right? So when you want to turn on the lights, you can turn on the lights. Now there might be some sort of incentives to get you not to use power at certain times, you know, for various reasons. You know, maybe if you've got an electric vehicle, and ways we can encourage you to charge at times when there's plenty of power. But still, the overall idea is that when customers need the power, they've got it. And really, my field in general, and my aspect of electrical engineering and power systems is focused on reliability, meaning preventing blackouts or limiting outages. And there's sort of two components of that. One is the large-scale blackouts, which are fortunately fairly rare, and we want to not have those either. We don't want to have those increase when we have more renewables.
Hmm.
Then the other aspect is the thing you mentioned at the beginning of the show with storms and that type of thing, where you're losing lines, and typically those are the problems that are occurring at the lower voltages, and that's a little bit less of what we're doing in the center.
So obviously all around the country there's a huge amount of existing electrical grid infrastructure, so I don't know if that's the same infrastructure all the way down the line that you would need ultimately for what you envision, but is the existing system itself a barrier to getting in place, to actuating, as you say, what you want to do?
Yeah, I would say the existing system is certainly a part of the issue here, because you built it up to do certain type of thing, certain function, and now we're going to ask it to do something else. And these are very large assets, very expensive to build, very hard to get rights of way to put up new transmission lines. And so you can't really just take what you have and pack it up and move it to another location where you need it. So you have to figure out ways to take advantage of the existing infrastructure. And I guess just in general, that might be one of the bigger technical challenges, is that you can't design your ultimate system and then just build that, right? You've got to take what you have now and figure out a way to get from there to what you want to get to, in a reliable way, in an economic way. And that's hard, because building on top of a legacy system creates a lot of constraints.
So I would imagine, when you talk about the cost, I mean, not only is it expensive to make those changes, but do you run into resistance on the part of the electric utility industries where they think it's just fine the way it is?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's a natural thing for people to, who are in an industry, that seems to be working fine, is to resist change. So, most of the people I know in the utility industry are well-intentioned, and they're focused on delivering power safely and reliably and economically, and then asking them to do something new, that there's a certain resistance, because they know how to do things now and they know how to do it well. There's maybe a less friendly way. I think there's some resistance to change, just because some of these changes are going to undercut the economic model for utilities. Mm-hmm. Certainly there's a concern with highly distributed sources. If you get a lot of rooftop solar and then you still ask utilities to provide backup service or things like net metering, where they have to buy back at retail rates, that's hard for utilities, because they've provided all this infrastructure, and then they're not making energy sales. And so those energy sales are what subsidize all the infrastructure, all your transmission lines and substations and so on. So and maintenance of those things. So there's some business things there too, and there's, I think, some natural human nature reluctance and change too.
So, basically, what's the electric power grid like? Is each region independent of the others and not connected with them? I mean, is it all, a bunch of little fiefdoms that cover several states or whatever? Or how is that set up? How about major utilities like the TVA? I mean, what will have to change in a kind of a major business model sense to have this happen?
Yeah, what's interesting about the power grid is really how interconnected it all is. So if we talk about the North America, the entire eastern part of North America, referred to as the Eastern Interconnect, it all rotates same speed. It's all synchronized and operating together. So it's interconnected. A change in frequency in Florida is going to be seen in North Dakota. It's going to be seen in Maine. It's going to travel across the system and up into Canada. Hydro-Quebec is a separate part of the system, but in Ontario and that. So it is all interconnected. Things that happen in one place impact other parts of it. What I think would be different in our center, we're talking about wide area control, is that while things are interconnected today, you do tend to operate a little bit more locally. You don't necessarily know what's going on other parts of the system. And what we're thinking is that, well, if we really want to be able to operate the system in the future, I not only need to be interconnected like I am now, but I'm going to have to closely coordinate what I do from far distance. So if the Southeast is going to be relying on, you know, wind generation in North Dakota one day, then the utilities in the Southeast are going to have to be able to understand what's happening in that part of the system if they want to operate reliably. Another part of that, which I find particularly interesting, is that every part of the world and different parts of the U.S., they have kind of built up their system in a way, for historical reasons that, or whatever, that has particular characteristics. Right? So on the East Coast, things are really tightly interconnected and very robust. If you look out west, partly because of the mountain ranges and that and where the population is, it's kind of like a big donut. And that gives the system, you know, different sorts of characteristics, different issues technically with oscillations and these other things. So, I suspect as the system changes, you know, you'll see those characteristics change somewhat.
You talked earlier about the increase in kind of wide area control that would be needed. So when, I don't know, let's say if there's a major blackout in New York City and there's a need to draw power from another region, is that done automatically, or do people have to pick up the phone and call and say, hey, we had a problem here, you need to do this and so? I mean, will it become more automatic than it is now, or stay more or less the same that way?
I think the ultimate goal is to have these things become more automatic. You know, if you're going to respond to events in time, it pretty much has to be automatic. There's certain types of events. I think certainly the first stages where you might be coordinating things over wider areas, you wouldn't want to close what we call closing the loop on that, making it automatic. You probably wouldn't want to do that initially. You've got to get more confidence, and you've got to get some improvements in technology. But eventually the goal is for automation, I think. And that's also a challenge, because much of the successful operation of the system today relies on the operator's knowledge. They know how the system works, and it's important to have that operator in the loop to control things and make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Let's take, for example, a big solar flare that would have a huge impact on the electrical power supply system. So how does the current system today handle a thing like that versus what you envision in, I don't know, 10 years or so, the future system handling a big event like that that affects a, you know, big part of the country, if not the whole country?
Yeah, solar flare, that's a hard time. I mean, there's only been a few incidents where these what we call GIC, the geomagnetically induced currents, have led to outages, and people are studying them again. That's a very sort of special event in the sense that where it happens in sort of particularly long lines as they get the induced voltages and their currents going up. But we can think about other big events, storms and this type of things, which take out a lot of the system.
So a hurricane.
I think, hurricane, this type of thing. You know, some of that, of course, once you lose too much infrastructure, there's nothing really you can do. But there is a lot of cooperation today in terms of supplying replacement equipment and that. What I think you might see in the future is if the transmission itself is more flexible, then. And you, particularly with the hurricane, we've got some predictability. You may be able to, shut down certain parts of the system, certain down power plants, and hunker down, and then still be providing the power you need from remotely. And another idea people had is that if we can maintain some communications and some other parts of the infrastructure, that you may be able to operate the system with lots of little pockets and islands of things. So they might, be, let's say we had a lot of distributed solar rooftop. Well, maybe you could maintain power in a particular region even when you'd lost part of the transmission because you have these other resources. So there are advantages of reliability when you start going to distributed systems.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Kevin Tomsovic, who's the director of the Engineering Research Center for Ultra-Wide Area Resilient Electric Energy Transmission Networks, also known as CURRENT, at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. And they study basically They research ways to improve the electric power transmission system in the future. So, Kevin, one thing you know that I think people are starting to think more and more, maybe worry more about all the time, is cyber terrorism and cyber warfare, whether done by individuals or small groups or countries. Can the control nodes for the electrical system easily be hacked and sabotaged? And are you looking at ways to kind of harden them to that possibility?
I don't know if they can be easily hacked, but certainly they can. It's an interconnected world, and that's a concern. It is something that we look at as well in a couple of different ways. One is just trying to make things tougher to crack, to get into. But then also, if the system is compromised, then can you recognize it or can you coordinate off so that it doesn't impact the rest of the system? So I think there's good ways of doing that. And surprisingly, the power grid is pretty robust. You know, I have a friend from former Yugoslavia, and during the violence there, he used to talk about, well, in the middle of the war, and they're bombing the transmission lines and stuff and power plants, and still we had power most of the time. So, you know, you can put up with a fair amount of outages. So hopefully we can keep that sort of robustness. And if you have that, then, you know, an isolated cyber attack here or there should not cause you problems.
Okay, so it's not a situation where one powerful virus or one piece of software can bring the whole system down. It would just be a little spotty outage kind of somehow.
Well, you would hope that can be. Certainly if it depends. I mean, the stuff that I've seen would require some physical intervention as well. So if you would have to be blocking some of the natural protection that's built into the system. Or I suppose if you get into the control center, which is supervising everything, that's more of a vulnerable point, but then that's also harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess the other way to look at this is utilities have dealt with for many years the disgruntled employee problem. Somebody who's got a beef or disgruntled employee or disgruntled customer, and I guess employees, because they have the inside line, it's more of a concern. And, you know, I don't know of any case where they've really been able to bring down the system, right? So there's protections in there to so that while things are interconnected, that they don't all come crashing down together.
What do they, you know, on that subject, what do power plants do? Is there a lot of security with employees where they check what's on their flash drives when they're coming in and out? I mean, because that's the kind of thing you could introduce something into a power plant with if you were, as you say, a disgruntled employee or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I think historically probably no. There wasn't that. And I suppose after 9/11 they instituted a lot of things. I know it's harder for me to take students now to visit power plants and that, or I have to do some pre-advance noting, and they're not so open. So I'm sure they have some of those type of effects or those types of policies in place to prevent it. But I think the real thing is that you design a system in a robust way so that it's not trivial to come up with the ways to cause problems. It's not like you can just give a command to open up a circuit breaker somewhere and that's going to do a lot of damage.
That's good. You talked earlier a little bit about net metering, which is the idea of people with solar panels on top of their roof or with a little windmill in their backyard or a little wind power generator can push power back into the grid and reduce their bill or even, at the extreme, get paid for power or whatever, and that kind of causes some consternation in some ways to the electric power companies if it gets too extensive. So that's sort of a newfangled thing that they have to deal with. But another newfangled thing kind of is electric and hybrid vehicles. And will the greater use of those affect the power transmission system? I mean, I guess it kind of, to me, it always seems like it sounds green, but it really just shifts the energy generation problem to a different place, the power plant, rather than out of the exhaust of your car. But is that something that you have to kind of factor into figuring out electric power capacity and generation schemes for the future?
Yes, definitely. And I think the first thing is the assumption underlying how green an electric vehicle is that you have more choices for your generation. So there are some more benign sources. If it's clearly, if it's just shifting from a fuel-based, you know, oil-based or gasoline car to a coal plant, and there's probably not a whole lot of gain there. Presumably, you're going to something that's cleaner. The other thing is it's a little bit easier to do put pollution controls on a stationary plant than a car. But in terms of the transmission, what I work on, the real issue here is the amount of load and how quickly one needs to be able to deliver it. So the electric vehicle, if they're going to charge, say, at night when the load is pretty low and it's going to do a nice trickle load, it's actually not going to be a big challenge for the grid, depending on the numbers here. Because, in fact, the nighttime is kind of a wasted resource for the transmission grid. Load is very light. Sometimes you even have to take out lines because the loading is so light that you get over-voltage problems. And also with wind, a lot of times you have very good wind at night and no place for it to go, so they often spill wind at night. At least they do in the Northwest. I don't know how often, but it's something that you have to worry about. So in that way, it could almost be beneficial. And I think that's kind of the hope, is that that we'll have electrical vehicles and they'll be used, charged in a way that helps out the system. Now, if they come on in the middle of the day during your peak on a hot summer day, then you're going to be in trouble. You're going to have to build up the system to be able to handle that, and it's going to be expensive. I guess the other issue for electric vehicles is how quickly are you going to be able to charge them? So if people want to use them and they have very fast charging, want to be able to pull in like we do with a gas station, be charged up in 15 minutes, that puts a lot more stress on the system, and it's going to require building up the certain parts of the system much more, substation level, and that, because those are going to be current levels that really the system wasn't designed for. So I think the positive way to look at it, though, is if we can do most of that charging as trickle charges at night when the power is low, then it's going to be very helpful for the system.
Kevin, we just have maybe a minute left. If you can answer this in a minute or so, how long will this modernization that you have in mind, that you guys are researching and kind of envisioning, how long will it take? Is it a staged process, or does it go in big jumps, or what? Just briefly.
Well, I think it's a staged process. You hear these goals of so much percentage renewables by, say, year 2030, and that, and you're going to have to follow along that. So it's going to have to be in place for those, and it'll continue after that. But I don't think you'll see major change in the way the system is operated in anything less than 15 years. It's a long-term process for large infrastructure.
Like most big things are. Well, I'm afraid we have to leave it there. Dr. Kevin Tomsevic, thank you so much for being on with us in American Variety. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been interesting. And as always, thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.